A reading from Mark's Gospel, Mark chapter 2, beginning at verse 13. Mark chapter 2, 13. Once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. A large crowd came to him and he began to teach them. As he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," Jesus told him, and Levi got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. When the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, "Why does he eat with the tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said to them, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." It's coming on to just on 12 months since my mum passed away and went to glory. And she was a research scientist. And I've said this before, but one of the favourite sayings of a scientist that's doing research is, "That's interesting." Because you've observed something you haven't expected to observe. You've seen something you weren't looking for, and you go, "That's interesting." And as we read through this short story here from the Gospel of Mark, I want us to go, "That's interesting." And to me, it's really interesting because it says, while Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house. And that might seem innocuous to you, but that's interesting. It really is interesting. And why is it interesting? Well, earlier on in chapter 2, the last time Jesus was in a house, the house got destroyed. There was a big crowd and some enthusiastic people climbed up on the roof and made a big hole in it. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'd held a party at my place and someone had climbed on the roof and dug a hole in the roof, I might be a bit circumspect about going and having another party in a house because something might happen to the roof. And yet, here's Jesus going into a house again. Why is that? And then that sort of sparks off some interest. Okay, so why was Jesus in a house? And you can look through the first, and we're going to skim through the first four chapters of the Gospel of Mark, and it's really interesting that Mark has recorded the places Jesus went and the sort of things he did. We've got to remember that Jesus didn't do anything of his own authority, but he did what he saw the Father doing. Everything he did was deliberate and had a purpose. But we haven't often, I don't think, read these chapters looking for what he did and then going, "That's interesting, why might he have done that?" And it starts back in chapter 1, straight after Jesus' baptism, and it says the Spirit sent him out into the wilderness. So one of the places Jesus goes is the wilderness. Then he comes back and he's walking by the lake, just going down through everyday life, and he calls disciples, Peter and Andrew and James and John, to follow him. And then he goes into a synagogue and he casts out a demon out of a person. And then after the synagogue, they go back to the house of Simon and Peter. And they have some food there and a whole bunch of people arrive and they do some healings. Then the next day, Jesus is off in a solitary place and then he's meeting a leper and then he goes into the house where they dug the hole in the roof, and that's the beginning of Mark chapter 2. And then we come to the reading that we started with, and he's out by the lake. And it says a large crowd came to him, and the lake is like, I guess like his MCG. It's the place that you go to deal with a big crowd. And Jesus was attracting big crowds. But instead of just going to the lake, he also went to houses because he went to the house of Levi. And then in the end of chapter 2, he's walking through a field. And in the beginning of chapter 3, he's in a synagogue, back in a synagogue. And then it says in chapter 3, verse 7, Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the lake and a large crowd came. So he's back out in the big public space. And then it goes on. In verse 13, he went up a mountain and prayed. He's by himself praying and he called some disciples to him. And then in verse 20, it says, then Jesus entered a house. Why? I don't know, because it says, and again a crowd gathered so that he and his disciples were not even able to eat. I mean, there's these downsides to Jesus being in a house, but he keeps doing it. Why? That's interesting, I think. And you can read, I won't keep going, but through chapter 4 again, you'll see that Jesus goes through this sequence. He's by himself in solitude. He's walking down the street or next to the lake. He's with a large crowd in a lake, next to the lake. He's in a house with a bunch of people. Jesus is in these different settings, and he deliberately chooses to be in these different settings. And there's good reasons for that, and we're going to be looking at some of them today. But we deliberately last week had a community gathering in the hall. It's more like we were in a house than we were in the church building. And we deliberately did that so that we would have a lived experience of it, so we could then talk about it today. Because there are things that you can do in a church building like this, like our great music team this morning, that you can't do in a house. And there's things that you can do in a house, like we did last week, that it's much harder to do in a church gathering like this. And one of them is eating. You know, when Jesus instituted communion, it was in the middle of a meal. And when in the passage in 1 Corinthians, it's essentially assuming that they're in a house and it's part of a meal, they do the communion, right? But that's very hard for us to do here. And so we have little cups with pre-prepared little wafers and little bits of juice, right? And we hand it out. It's not like a meal at all. It's a symbolic meal because we can't do a meal properly here. Whereas last week, we had a beautiful brunch thanks to Kaz and Claire, right? And we shared food together and we talked together. And we shared life and we talked about God and we had fun together and we shared our burdens. And there's things you can do in a house that you can't do in a church service. Just like there are things you can do in a church service that you can't do in a house. And so I'm just going to invite actually Moddy to come up, and then Chris and then Kaz after that. That's just to forewarn them. Come. So I just thought, rather than me rabbiting on the whole time, we'd just have you up here as well. And I guess, first of all, I just wanted to, some of your reflections on last week and the experience of us being in that gathered space, a slightly different mode. What did you say to you?
Well, it wasn't as boring as normal church. No, I'm only... I shouldn't say that. It's different.
Yeah.
It's different. Yeah. I was reflecting on this, and it's more like... my attention span is shocking. I don't know if anybody else's is. And yeah, thanks, David. Good. And what happens is we kind of play like a theatre in church every Sunday. So everyone turns up, and for about an hour and a half or an hour, you're turning up to a theatre, yeah? So you have to kind of take it all in and everything like that. In a mid-sized gathering, it's more like you're getting like 10 or 15 minute kind of bite-sized pieces, and it kind of breaks up the bit so you can kind of understand where God is in those little pieces. So with the time with the kids, you know, that was very different than, say, the time where people were sharing. And I particularly reflected on when Rita gave her personal story. That was very powerful, and that was a very different feeling than, you know, having someone kind of just preach at you or, you know, all of that type of stuff. So, yeah.
Good. Excellent. And so you've had... When you and Kaz were in London years ago, you had the privilege of being part of Holy Trinity, Brompton, Home of Alpha, and they do a thing where they do mid-sized groups, which they call pastorates, and you were part of one of those. Do you want to tell us a bit about that story?
Yeah, so that was literally, we would turn up to somebody's house, we would have a meal, and then normally there was a bit of a theme that, you know, God has been speaking to people during the week. And then we would have a time of maybe discussing that, maybe breaking up into even smaller groups, kind of like a bit of a cocktail thing where you're discussing a kind of an understanding. And it could be, we discussed everything from political to like how God works in people's hearts and all this type of stuff. And it really, what it did was it allowed people to have a voice and to feel like that they could actually translate where God was doing things in their life into, you know, into things that were happening for other people as well. And then you'd have, you know, maybe some time of prayer, but it wasn't like small group prayer. It was more like the way that I talk about it is it was just a place of belonging where you share life together. That was, and different than a small group where you get really, really deep. It was kind of like belonging and being feeling like you've got a family around you. That was the main thing. Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks so much for
no,
that.
No, worries.
Now we'll go back to the boring bit. And now we'll go to the interesting bit because I'm going to invite Chris up.
Hello.
So one of the things that we haven't actually done at our place because of the lockdown last year, and you just want to move over a tiny bit because of the, we've got to be in the camera shots now. is that we had weekly oikos meals at our place.
We did.
And they haven't restarted for, since the lockdown. But I guess I thought I'd get you to share a bit about what you found, both sort of logistically about how you do meals in a lightweight way on a regular basis for larger groups of people, and also what having meals together does.
So we love eating together. We love food. Most of us do. And so there is something powerful about having food with other people because it breaks down a whole bunch of barriers that are normally there. And so, yes, Celia and Mike and Dave and I would have oikos with a whole bunch. Anyone was welcome to our table, but to do that every week, it's pretty exhausting if you're trying to put on a dinner party. Like, I don't know about you, but most of the time when we think about inviting people over, we provide everything. And by the end of the night, if you're the one that's done all the cooking and the cleaning and the setting up, you get to the end of the night and you go, oh my gosh, that was great, but I'm really stuffed. And so if we're doing that every week because we wanted people to come and eat, it has to be lighter weight than that. And so we just worked out a way logistically with food that we would rotate through a base ingredient that we would provide and then we'd get people to bring toppings because we actually used to do potluck. And then it got to a night where we just say to people, just bring something to share. And then one particular night we had 6 chocolate cakes and nothing else. And we ended up going and getting fish and chips from the local shop. And so we went, you know, people found it hard if they were coming to our house to know what to make and bring. But if we just said to them, we're doing pasta, bring a topping, you go, oh, well, I'll bring bolognese. And it's okay if you have 3 different sorts of bolognese, right? And so logistically, we just had to work out a way to make it really lightweight so that you didn't get exhausted at the end of the night and you actually went, oh, I could do this next week. And it also, so the other thing that happens when you get people to bring something is that they feel part of it. And they actually have ownership over it because I need to come because I'm bringing something to contribute. Even if it's a bottle of drink, if they can't bring something else. Like there's something quite powerful about the belonging space that Moddy talked about. We want people to belong and to help them belong, we want them to contribute. So people always feel like they belong when they have a purpose and they're part of something. But logistically for me, in my house, I just needed to have it clean, which actually was a really good discipline. That sounds terrible. My house is normally clean. But it was a discipline every week of having a welcoming space and then allowing people to contribute.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I think our house looks clean all the time until Chris points out to me the places where it isn't clean. There's some genetic thing that I've got. I don't know what that is. So we are in this next season wanting to see if we can involve all of us in a mid-sized group. Last year, we were all in small groups, and we learnt the deep benefit of that, the closeness and the support and the encouragement and the sharing that got us through lockdown, right? And we've also really enjoyed the gathering in these public spaces in this since the beginning of this year, haven't we? You know, and it's some sense of normality, and we get to connect with a wider group of people, and we have great music and all of those sort of things. But what we want to also do now, and this is both from we want to do it because Jesus did it, and there's some reasons why Jesus did it. But we also want to do it because we think when we're in our building project, we're going to be without a building again, and it will be a really important place for us to be. And so over the next month, we want to work really hard at helping each of us find which mid-sized group we might be a part of. And I'm going to invite Kaz to come up now briefly, and because she's part of the thing about mid-sized groups is that they can be places that people that aren't necessarily part of church can connect with a bit more easily. And so I just invited Kaz up to talk about some opportunity that we might be able to pull off together.
Thank you. Well, for us in particular, we're involved in school and kinder and sporting activities and sporting groups, and we meet lots of people and we love people, and we find that a lot of people, for example, in our area, Mount Waverley, are really keen to have more of a community. Some people move from overseas or from other suburbs or, yeah, other countries, and they're really seeking community and they're looking for friendships. And we just want to provide sort of a gathering where they can come and it can be relaxed and they can just chill and hang out. And also we can share some God stuff with them, and definitely food. Food's very important.
Yeah, excellent. Fantastic. Thanks for that, Kaz. So one of our home churches, HOG, has sort of become one of these mid-sized groups already with some of the people who have joined it. And we think there's an opportunity for us to maybe do another thing like that. But we need some people, like some people say, yeah, I want to be part of that. Because Kaz and Marty, they can't pull it off by themselves, and we're not expecting them to. But if you think, yeah, I'd like to do something like we did last week, but in a house somewhere, and it's really relaxed and has some spiritual content, but it's not overwhelming if you're not a Christian or whatever else, we'd love you to talk to Kaz and Marty or me, and have a think and a pray about it, just so that we can see if we can arrange ourselves as a church, because we think we can do maybe three, maybe four of these sorts of groups, and we want to try and make sure everybody's part of them. Now, we don't want to lose the benefit of Sundays, and we don't want to lose the benefit of small groups, so we're going to work really hard to see if we can mix our rhythms so that we can do that. And I can probably get rid of the second mic now, can't I, Dean? I don't need two mics because I know it's not stereo. And so we want to get back to the scriptures. And the interesting thing here is, in the story we read from Mark, is that I doubt that Levi went to the synagogue. And certainly some of the other quote-unquote tax collectors and sinners wouldn't have gone to the synagogue. But they did go to Levi's house. You see, that's one of the things, is that one place or one size doesn't fit all. And even with us, there are different size gatherings that you will prefer to be part of. Some of us prefer to be in the big group. Some of us prefer to be in small groups. Some of us prefer to be in mid-sized groups. And there are other people who would say, yeah, I'm happy to come to a church service. And others say, well, I'll never come to a church service, but I'm happy to go to a barbecue at someone's house. And so the reason we want to do a mix of these different size gatherings is that they will be doorways for people that feel more comfortable in coming to different places. And Jesus did it all the time. He always went to houses and he always had food with him. Secondly, they're a different purpose. A bit later on, in chapter 4, you see, it says, Jesus began teaching by the lake. So he's out in the big public space and he's, you know, giving his sermons or whatever else. And that happens. But then, if you keep reading on, after he's given the parable of the sower, it then says this in verse 10, when he was alone, the 12 and the others around him asked him about the parables. You see, in smaller settings, in house settings, in mid-sized group settings, you can have those sort of conversations that you can't really have on a Sunday morning. You know, otherwise it sort of just doesn't work as saying that we have a conversation together. And so there are different purposes that happen in a house gathering, in a mid-sized gathering, that don't happen in a big gathering on Sunday. So the different sizes are accessible to different people. They are, by their very nature, have different strengths and purposes. And they also have different levels of participation. So when we are here on a Sunday, there is a handful of people that are up on the stage participating in terms of doing a contribution. Right? We're all contributing by singing and all those sort of things, but the level of participation, active verbal from the front participation, is much less. On the other hand, if you're in a small group, guess what happens? There's no place to hide, is there? Everyone has to participate. You know, everyone's expected to put in their 10 cents worth or their $5 worth or whatever else it is, right? But as we experienced last week, mid-sized groups are this sweet spot where you can have large numbers of people participating, but those that don't want to participate don't have to. So we got everybody to say, gave everybody a chance, just write down what's the one thing that God wants you to contribute to our gathering together. And we, I think, had about 15 or 16 different separate contributions that people said, yeah, this is what I think God's prompting me to give. And we collected them all together and we curated them in and organized them. But that not everybody contributed. But they didn't then feel left out because they didn't. But it was amazing. We had that great song that we did today that Malcolm suggested. We ended up singing an old song, God is so good, God is so good, God is so good, he's so good to me. And about four different people all had verses from the book of Ephesians. And it was really clear that God was speaking in a coordinated way through his people. And so one size doesn't fit all, because they're accessible by different people, they have different purposes, and there's different levels of participation. And Jesus deliberately engaged in the lake and in the walking down the street and in the house and in the small groups. And he did it because he was training his disciples to do the same thing. You just read through Acts. And they do stuff. They encounter people on the street, like Philip with the Ethiopian eunuch. They go to people's houses, like Peter goes to Cornelius' house. And they're teaching in the temple, like Peter and Paul did at different points. But back in Mark's Gospel, in chapter 6, Jesus has been having his disciples around him, and he then sends them out on mission, and he says, in verse chapter 6, take nothing for the journey except a staff, no bread, no bag, no money in your belts, wear sandals and no extra shirt. Whenever you enter a house, stay there until you leave that town. So he was giving them the experience of being in houses and doing mission and ministry in houses, and then he sent them out to do mission and ministry in houses. And in the beginning of Acts chapter 2, it says that they gathered together in the temple and they broke bread together in each other's homes. And in that dynamic of people gathering together in different sorts of sizes, it says the church grew in number. And so we want to engage in these different size groups because Jesus deliberately engaged his disciples in the different size groups. And we just want to copy Jesus. And we think great things will come out of it. So, there's going to be hopefully lots of talking and figuring out where we can all go and so that we can all fit into these groups over the next few months. So, I encourage you to be open. If you've got thoughts or ideas, let's have conversations. Let's work it out together. I think it'll be fantastic and exciting as we go respond to the that's interesting. Jesus thought it was so important to risk it again, even though a hole got dug in a roof one time. I'm going to invite the music team back up and we're going to sing that song again, "We Are One in the Father's Love." And in these mid-size and small-size groups is one of the main places that we get to care for and love each other. And this is a song that talks about that we are together with God and that we love each other and serve each other, and we want to continue to be a community that does that. So let's stand together and sing this song again.